Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We are really glad you're here because today we're looking at something that, well, on the surface, it seems really, really dry. We're talking federal regulations, compliance audits.
It sounds like pure bureaucracy.
Exactly. The kind of stuff that makes you want to just skip ahead. Mm. But, and this is why we do this show, when you actually start to peel back the layers of our source material, this report on empowering independence, you realize we're not talking about paperwork at all.
Yeah.
We're talking about a philosophical war happening right now in the world of disability rights.
It's that core tension, isn't it? The
yeah.
tension between keeping someone safe and letting them be free.
It's the fundamental dilemma of caregiving. I mean, how do you protect someone vulnerable without, you know, becoming their jailer?
It's a brutal trade-off.
And the source material today, it focuses on a very specific battleground for this, the HCBS final rule.
Right.
And before we get into the weeds, I really want to set the stakes here for you.
Mm-hmm.
We're not just talking about kids. We're talking about adults. Adults with intellectual disabilities, autism people who want jobs, who want to date, go to the movies, just live a life. But the system is struggling to figure out how to let them.
And the twist in this research, and this is what's so interesting to me, is that the very rules designed to give these adults more freedom are, ironically, scaring agencies into taking that freedom away.
That's the hook that got me, this massive unintended consequence. So our mission today is to unpack this paradox. We're going to look at what this HCBS final rule actually is, why it's causing so much panic in late 2025, and how one piece of tech platform called AngelSense is trying to rewrite the definition of privacy.
It's a fascinating case study in how good intentions can get so tangled up in red tape and how technology might be the only way to cut through it.
So let's start with the basics. We keep saying HCBS final rule. I feel like we need to define that before we go any deeper. What are we actually looking at here?
Sure. So HCBS stands for Home and Community-Based Services.
Yes.
And to understand why this rule exists, you really have to look at the history. I mean, decades ago, if you had a significant disability, the default was institutionalization.
Right. Out of sight, out of mind.
Tragically, yes. But over the last few decades, that whole philosophy shifted. The federal government basically said, no, Medicaid funding should support people living in the community.
Not just warehoused somewhere.
Exactly. And the final rule is the enforcement mechanism for that idea. It mandates that people receiving support must have full access to the community.
So they can't just be in a house in the suburbs. They have to actually be part of the suburb.
Precisely. They control their own schedules. They have privacy. They can have visitors. And crucially, they are free from coercion and restraint.
Okay, so on paper, this is a massive civil rights victory. It's about inclusion.
It is the gold standard. But this is where the friction starts. You mentioned coercion and restraint.
Right, and I'm assuming that's where the technology part comes in.
You hit the nail on the head. The rule is very, very strict about restraints. Historically, that meant physical things, locked doors,
yeah.
isolation rooms.
Sure.
But as technology evolved, regulators started looking at digital tools.
Like GPS trackers.
Exactly. So picture this. You have these service provider agencies, the people running the group homes. They rely on that federal money to keep the lights on.
And they're terrified of losing it.
Terrified. They read the final rule. They see freedom from restraint. And they immediately panic.
They think, if we put a GPS watch on John, that's a digital shackle, that's a restraint, we'll get audited and shut down.
That is the fear.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I get the logic. I mean, if I put a tracker on you without your permission, that's creepy. That's surveillance.
It's a total violation of my privacy.
So to stay compliant, they just ban the technology. They say, nope, no trackers allowed here. But the source material points out this massive, ironic failure in that logic.
Because if John needs support, let's say he tends to wander, you can't just leave him alone to walk into traffic in the name of freedom.
Precisely. You can't just abandon his safety needs. So if you take away the technology to avoid being restrictive, what do you replace it with?
A person.
A human chaperone. A staff member who is paid to stand 2 feet away from John at all times.
Which, wait, let's really look at that. If we're talking about privacy and feeling free, having a person breathing down your neck feels way more restrictive than wearing a watch.
That is the core argument of this deep dive. The source calls it the human shadow.
The human shadow, right?
Imagine you're a 30-year-old man. You want to go work a shift at a coffee shop. If you have a staff member hovering over you with a clipboard, are you really part of the community?
No. You're the client. You're the person who needs a babysitter. It just signals to everyone that you're different.
It kills what they call natural inclusion. You can't make friends when you've got a paid staff member listening to every word. The source argues that by banning the tech to protect privacy, agencies are actually enforcing a much more stigmatizing form of surveillance.
That's a huge insight. The idea that a human chaperone is more restrictive than a GPS tracker, it just flips the standard privacy narrative on its head.
It forces us to distinguish between two concepts the article highlights: passive surveillance versus supportive safety.
Okay, break those down for me, because surveillance is such a loaded word.
Right. So passive surveillance is the Big Brother model.
Yeah.
I'm watching you because I don't trust you. I'm tracking you to control you. That is restrictive.
That's stay in your room or I'll know.
Exactly. But supportive safety is different. It's technology that removes barriers. If the tech allows you to ride the bus alone, something you couldn't do otherwise, then it isn't restricting your freedom. It's the source of your freedom.
It's a tool. Like a wheelchair is a tool. You wouldn't say a wheelchair restricts someone. You'd say it mobilizes them.
That is the perfect analogy. And this is where AngelSense, the platform in our source, comes in. They're trying to prove to these terrified agencies that their device is the wheelchair, not the handcuff.
But let's play devil's advocate, because I know what you're thinking. A GPS tracker involves data, monitoring. Even if the intent is good, isn't there a huge potential for abuse?
That is the critical question. And if the agency just slaps a tracker on everyone and watches them on a big screen, that is a violation.
So it's not about the hardware?
No, it's about the consent and the configuration.
Okay, talk to me about the mechanics of that. How does an electronic device respect consent?
Well, AngelSense developed what they call the 18 plus model, and it's designed specifically for this. The first pillar is that it's voluntary.
So the user has to say yes.
They have to say yes. Informed consent. But it's more than just signing a form once. The source emphasizes that the individual stays in control of the features. It's customizable based on what they want.
Give me an example of that.
Okay, so take the smart voice feature. This allows a caregiver to speak through the device, kind of like a speakerphone.
Which sounds great if you're lost.
Incredibly useful in a crisis. But imagine you're on a date. You don't want your mom's voice suddenly booming out of your pocket asking if you're okay.
Oh, definitely not. That would be mortifying.
So the user can have that feature toggled off during those times. Or take location sharing. The user can decide that only their dad sees their location, not the entire group home staff.
So it's not an open broadcast, it's a private channel.
Right. And the source makes a big point about data privacy. The data isn't sold, it's strictly a safety utility.
Yeah.
But the real compliance magic is about who holds the keys.
What do you mean?
If the caregiver forces the device on you, it's a restraint. If you put the device on because you want to go to the park alone, it's empowerment.
It changes the power dynamic completely.
Completely. The source talks about person-centered planning. It's a buzzword, but it just means the plan is built around what the person wants, not what's easy for the staff.
So if John says, I want to work at the hardware store, the agency can't just say, no, we don't have staff to watch you.
Exactly. And if they can't afford a human shadow, the technology becomes the enabler. The source argues that denying someone access to this technology is actually the restrictive act.
Wow. So banning the tracker is the civil rights violation.
In this context, yes. Because without it, that person is stuck at home.
I want to move to the emotional side of this. We've talked about rules and toggles, but the source included some feedback from actual users. What are they saying?
This was the most compelling part for me. You expect the feedback to be, you know, I feel safe. And that is there. But the overwhelming sentiment was about feeling free.
Free?
Yes. There's one quote that really stuck with me. A user said, I can go out alone again. My parents don't worry, and I don't have to check in every hour. It's my independence. Just safer.
Just safer. That's a really concise way to put it.
It removes the anxiety. And we forget that anxiety is a shackle, too. If a parent is terrified their adult child will get on the wrong bus, they will subconsciously stop them from going out.
The helicopter parent phenomenon, but with much higher stakes.
Exactly. The tech acts as a pressure valve. It lets the parent step back, and when they step back, the individual can step forward.
And that connects to the dignity of risk, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
The idea that to be human, you have to be allowed to make mistakes. You have to be allowed to get lost and figure it out.
That's a profound point. The human shadow sanitizes the world. Mm-hmm. It prevents mistakes. The technology allows the world to be messy, but it keeps a safety net underneath.
So if the users love it and the families love it, why are agencies still so scared? Is it just stubbornness?
It's not just stubbornness. It's liability.
Yeah.
You have to understand, these providers get audited by state surveyors who walk in with a checklist.
Right.
And if that surveyor sees something that even looks like a restraint, they flag it. They might shoot first and ask questions later.
And a flagged audit is an existential threat.
It can mean losing hundreds of thousands of dollars. So they default to the most conservative interpretation, no tech.
So how does a company like AngelSense fix that?
They are trying to educate the surveyors and the agencies at the same time. The source details this compliance toolkit they've built.
What's in the toolkit?
It's really practical. First, they provide templates for care plan language. They give agencies the specific legal phrasing to explain why the tech is being used.
So they don't have to guess.
Right. Instead of writing, "We track John so we don't lose him," which sounds restrictive, they write, "John uses this device to enable his goal of independent employment." The framing matters.
That's a huge difference. One is custody, the other is support.
They also provide specific consent forms, training webinars for staff.
Training on what? How to use the app.
Not just the app, but the ethics. How to use it in a compliant way. Don't check the map every 5 minutes just to be snoopy. Only use it when there's a legitimate safety reason.
So teaching digital boundaries.
Digital boundaries is the perfect term. And finally, they encourage agencies to use data. If you can show a surveyor, "Look, before this tech, this person went into the community once a week. Now they go 5 times a week. That's an argument that's hard to refute.
It proves the support of safety concept with hard numbers.
Exactly. It turns the device from a liability into an asset during an audit. It's evidence of success.
This really does feel like a bridge between the old world of custodial care and this new world of full inclusion.
It is, and it's a rocky transition. We hear tracking and we recoil because we value our own privacy so much.
That's a really interesting point. We project our own feelings onto this. I don't want to be tracked, so I assume it's bad for everyone.
But we have to ask, is our definition of privacy hurting the people we want to protect? If we insist on no tracking to the point where it forces someone into isolation, have we really done them a favor?
It's almost a privilege to be able to say, "I want to be off the grid." For some people, being on the grid is the only way to be in the world.
That's the profound takeaway. Technology is neutral. A GPS tracker is just silicon and radio waves. It's the intent and the control that determine whether it's a tool of oppression or a tool of liberation.
A shackle or a key?
In the hands of a controlling institution, it's a shackle. In the hands of an individual who wants to explore, it's a key to the city.
It's fascinating stuff. It really challenges you to rethink what independence looks like in 2026.
It certainly does.
As we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a thought. We've been talking about disability services, but this touches on a universal nerve.
It does. We usually think of privacy as the absence of technology. I'm private when I leave my phone at home.
Right. To be alone is to be disconnected. That's the classic definition.
But consider this. If refusing technology forces us into a situation where we need more human oversight, are we actually prioritizing our comfort over our freedom?
And here's the provocative thought. Is it possible that true privacy in the modern world actually requires a digital layer? Can we only be truly alone if we are digitally connected?
It's a counterintuitive idea. But if being digitally naked means you have to be physically watched, maybe the digital layer is the armor that lets you be free.
The invisible armor. Something to think about.
Indeed.
That's it for this deep dive. We want to thank the source material from AngelSense for opening our eyes to this. It's a complex topic, but a really important one.
Always a pleasure.
Stay curious, and we'll catch you on the next one.